Welcome to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Well, it's all right, riding around in the breeze. Well, it's all right, if you live the life you please. Well, it's all right, doing the best you can.
Welcome to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. Great to be here today. A fine day to take your dog for a walk. Eric, wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely would agree. Beautiful out there.
Well, it's always a nice day to take your dog for a walk, as we like to say. And as the weather's getting warmer, depending on where you live also, just be careful about that heat and making sure that your dog is not overheated while you're taking them out for that fabulous walk.
And we've had a very mild summer so far, so it's been perfect dog walking weather.
It has been. Usually, so typically it's like 4th of July and then it gets to be summer, although last year it was like summer all year. And now this year it's we're sticking in spring, I guess. So.
Yeah, we had some strange heat waves during the spring and now it's spring-like weather in the summer. So
all right.
Who knows anymore, but you got to exercise regardless and you got to take those pooches out.
Well, speaking of walking your dog, the Old Dog Haven Walk for Old Dogs is coming up July 17th. At Cromwell Park and Shoreline. You can go to olddoghaven.org to find out more about this walk. Register you and your dog. Dogs of all ages, dogs and humans of all ages are welcome. This is Old Dog Haven's big annual fundraiser, so it's a great, great organization to support. I had Ardith DeVries with Old Dog Haven on last week. We had a great conversation about all sorts of things. One of the highlights for me was when we started talking about dogs and their experience of grief. And I know Ardith told me that got her thinking on the topic, and she's actually going to write a blog post about this as a follow-up to our conversation. So I'll look forward to seeing more of her thoughts on that. It was a great conversation. You can find all of our shows archived on our website, dogradioshow.com. You can also download us for free on iTunes as a free audio podcast, and we will also post all of our shows on our Facebook page as well, which is The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. So I have a guest with me today who is a local teenager who lives in Olympia, Washington. Mariana Gonzalez is a junior handler in the show ring for dogs. Mariana, welcome to The Dog Show.
Hi.
Hi. So you are a... Is it the number two ranked junior handler in the country? Did I get that right?
I'm actually the number three junior handler in the country right now because I wasn't able to go to as many dog shows last month. So
Competitive, huh?
Yeah, it pretty is. You have to win once at least every month, if not more, to stay in the top three. So it's hard to get there, but it's harder to stay there. So, yeah.
So when you say you have to win, do you have to, like, what does that mean? You have to win, like, best in, like, how is it structured in the junior handler? Is it sort of structured the same as the regular dog show, or is it different?
Well, the dog show is, like, multiple events, like obedience, agility, and confirmation, and I compete in confirmation and junior handling. And confirmation judges the dog to the breed standard, whereas in junior handlers, it's for kids ages 9 to 18, and they divide them up by age. And if you won three class wins, and you move up into open, and I am an open senior, which is the highest class, and you have to first win your class, and then all the class winners will go back in for best junior, and they will pick their best junior, and you get points by how many people or juniors you beat, and juniors, they judge you on your handling abilities to present the dog to the breed standards, your ring etiquette, how you present yourself, and just how you work with your dog as a team.
So you are being judged more than the dog in junior handlers?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Versus the confirmation, general confirmation, where they are looking at the dog, and of course there's a component to the handler and sort of bringing out the best of that individual, but I wasn't aware that in junior handlers they're actually judging you as a handler and your skills and you know how you present. So that's pretty cool. So
yeah.
How did you get into this So I know that you have, you study, you know, you're in like an online high school. Is that right?
Yes. I am fortunate to attend the Insight School Washington, which is like a K-12 curriculum, and it allows me to be more flexible with my schedule. And so when I travel to dog shows, I could be gone from like a day or two out of the weekend or for a whole week.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously if I was in public school, I wouldn't be able to do that. So I take my school on the road with me, and I work in between ring times or if we're in the car or whenever, basically.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's cool. So it gives you flexibility to do what you're passionate about.
Yes, exactly.
And how did you find out that you were really, or, you know, how did you get into handling dogs and conformation?
Well, it first started when my mom took me to our local county fair and signed me up for a dog 4-H because I was more shy as a little kid and I didn't participate in sports. So dog showing is kind of my sport now,
mm-hmm.
in a way. And so I signed up for dog 4-H and we took a trip to the Puyallup Dog Show. And once I saw all the handlers in the ring showing dogs, I wanted to be like them. And so I researched the Doberman breed and I went to the Seattle Dog Show, met up with a breeder and she started mentoring me. And that's how I went from there because I've been in 4-H for 6 years. And I've been showing in American Kennel Club AKC dog shows for about 4 years now.
Mm-hmm. What have you learned? One of the things that I love about working with dogs in dog training and behavior. Now, I don't work in the kind of training that you do with show dogs. I work with pet dogs and helping people understand their dog's behavior, you know, or just basic training, that kind of thing. But I imagine that one thing we have in common is that we continue to learn. I've been doing this for about 15 years, and I just keep learning because every dog is so different. So if you look back to what you were doing when you were, you know, 4 years ago when you were first starting to now, what are some of the biggest things that you would say that you've learned in doing the work?
Well, you definitely have to know how to show each breed, how they are supposed to be presented. And you have to go from there to learn how the dog works and how it responds to your handling abilities and your style.
Mm-hmm.
And so some dogs will respond more to a softer touch and others require you to be more firm and be more direct in what you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
And so that all starts when they're puppies and training them to what we call free stacking. And hand stacking. So hand stacking is we stack them ourselves and place their feet like squarely underneath them.
Mm-hmm.
And then on our free stack, we will ask them to do it like verbally or with like our body gestures or applying pressure on the leash and collar. And so that's usually the hardest one to teach. And then what we call, we'll teach them to trot on the leash, basically to gait around the ring so the judge can judge how their side gait and their movement. And so I've had to go from Dobermans, which are really easy and pick up things quickly and because they're really smart, and going to Irish Setters, and they kind of develop more slowly and they're more stubborn. So I've had to learn how to deal with Irish Setters that are more stubborn and require a different type of handling style.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that they also learn, they don't learn as fast as Dobermans? Like, it's not just that they're stubborn, but that they just might have a different kind of intelligence and it's not so much training?
Yeah, they definitely mature slower mm-hmm. than Dobermans. And it also depends on the dogs because the high show two Irish Setters and the female I show, she's just plain stubborn.
Yeah.
And then the male dog, he just is, we're working on confidence with him and just getting him over something that has happened in the past with a bad experience with a judge. And so he just, they all have their different quirks and that we have to work through with them.
Yeah. One of the things that I've said over and over again is that one of the most important things to understand is that every dog is a unique individual, just like mm-hmm. us. And so you can know some things based off of, okay, this is a Doberman versus this is an Irish Setter. And that will give you information just based off of what you know about the breed tendencies. And then there's also individual variation you know, with all individuals, and that it's just so important in any type of training with any dog that they are understood as the unique individual that they are, and then that the training style is matched to the dog rather than trying to fit every dog into one style of training.
Yeah.
And that's part of what keeps it interesting, because every dog is so different. So just when you think you get your finger on something, and then a dog throws you a curveball and you learn something new. So it's fun mm-hmm. that way too. So you love working with Dobermans. It sounds like you just were sort of drawn to that breed when you were like, I want to work with dogs. That looks really fun. And then you just thought, I really like Dobermans, and then sort of researched the breed and ended up getting connected with that breed. It was just sort of a hunch that you had to go with Dobies?
Yeah, I just kind of always had a passion for Dobermans, but mm-hmm. it was a thing that I didn't really acknowledge, because when I would watch dog shows on TV, I seemed to always root for the Doberman, and there was a Doberman in our 4-H club, and I would always love to pet him at meetings. So for some reason, I never acknowledged, oh, I love Dobermans, until I went to go pick the dog that I wanted. And mm-hmm. so that's how it happened.
Yeah, they're great. I love Dobermans too, so I get it.
mm-hmm.
They're fun. And they're not as, they don't seem to have the personality that everybody thinks they do who don't know Dobermans.
Oh, yeah. They were bred to look intimidating. Because the breeder was a tax collector, and so he had to go into rougher neighborhoods. So he needed a dog that was a family dog, but also that looked intimidating to others. And so that's why they look intimidating, but really they're just really sweet and big babies.
Yeah.
So, but they're very smart also. So they will definitely watch their surroundings. And I've had experiences where they watch everything that when they're is the surprise bush in the parking lot. They're just like, what the heck is that? And they get kind of scared, and then they have to go up to it and see that, oh, it's just a bush.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Very, very keenly aware of everything in their surroundings.
Oh, yeah.
What's one of the hardest breeds you've worked with?
I worked with like Papillons and Chinese Crested all the way up to Great Danes, but I'd have to say for sure the Irish Setters, because they are slower to mature, it kind of may take them a longer time to pick up on things. And for example, I started training this puppy named Kendall, and she never really liked to stand still or let me stack her. Mm-hmm. And so finally we got through that, but then she would want to pull on the leash, and then we got through that, and then she wouldn't want to stay again. And then now she wants to lean on me. And so if I move my hand from her head, because they're supposed to hold their head and like extend their tail to kind of look like extensions of their top line, if I remove my hand, then she'll fall over because she's putting all her weight on her head and being lazy. Mm. So it's just a whole cycle of, oh, we got through this, but now we have another thing to work on.
Yeah.
So
do you think that some dogs just like showing more than others, and that some dogs just maybe don't like it, and that's why they're fidgety, or is it just that they're immature?
Well, I think it also has to do with her immature, and also her mother and grandmother, they all had that trait about them, but not all dogs are like that. And for sure, some dogs do love to show, and they will show even as, we call them veterans, and like 7 years and older, and they'll come into the ring and show like they're 2 years old. And so, and then there's other dogs who will do it, but it's not their passion. So it's just kind of like humans, they may like it, but mm-hmm. there's something else that they would prefer to do, but mm-hmm. they'll do it because they really want to please you.
So. Do you think that the dogs that I've seen when I've watched dogs in rings, the ones that are like, you know, in the ring, like, that's right, I am the best looking version of this breed. And they're just like totally, showing off, almost like they you can see that they really love it, and they almost feel like proud and confident. Seems mm-hmm. like those dogs, you know, that all sort of comes through, and that must help them in judging.
Oh yes, it definitely does for sure, because it kind of gives them not really attitude, but makes them seem more, what do you call it? They come to life. And mm-hmm. I was at a past show this weekend in Alaska, and the judge is saying, she just looks so determined. She knows what she's doing and focused. And she's almost like, come on, Mom, I know what I'm doing. Get with the program. And so it also helps to teach them that what we are asking them to do at a young age. And that way when they're older, they know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And so it's all with the training and all starting at a young age. Because when they're older, they may have some things that they like to do that are not what we're asking them to do, but it's just kind of, they are used to doing that anyway. So we have to train them out of that and then teach them what we are asking. So it definitely helps if they are trained from a young age and if they really do love to do it, because it just adds a certain pizzazz to them in the ring.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that you said is one of the hardest things to work with is that when dogs don't get socialized when they're puppies, which is kind of what you're just talking about now,
mm-hmm.
and that you had some advice for dog owners, you know, regardless of whether they wanted to show their dog or not, but that was to take dogs out in public.
Yes. Regardless of any breed or whatever you're going to do with your dog, it's good to get them socialized at a young age and to make it a positive experience. Just introducing them to new surroundings and noise, and always have treats with you when you're meeting new people, because they'll associate, oh, this is a good experience. And when meeting new dogs, you want to make sure that the new dog, you know, isn't too intimidating, so it doesn't leave an imprint on the dog. Mm-hmm. And so another thing to remember is that when new owners get their dogs, they're like, oh, it's a new puppy, I want to take it to my friend's house and to the dog park. But you have to remember that their immune system isn't as developed as older dogs. You have to wait till their vaccines are fully done. That way, your dog doesn't have a risk of getting sick.
Mm-hmm. One of the things. Well, I was just going to say, one of the things that I have talked about before, and I think it's really important, and you touched on it when you're talking about the importance of socialization, is that making sure that it's a positive experience, because mm-hmm. socialization, the quality of the socialization is more important than the quantity of it. So if you were like, well, I want to socialize my dog with other dogs, but then they meet other dogs that scare them mm-hmm. or got, you know, unfairly attacked by a dog that maybe just wasn't good with other dogs or didn't like puppies or whatever. So to be careful for people that it's not just, you know, take your dog everywhere, but to be careful, like you said, to bring treats and have them have positive experiences of meeting new people, positive experiences of meeting new dogs. And that is what is socialization that will serve us, is when the dog, it's like the kind of socialization that you want them to have. It's not just that they're keeping on feeling afraid or whatever, because then, like you said, it'll just imprint and they'll have an association that then you'll have to work them out of, or try to anyway.
Yep. And then you'll have to re-socialize them all over again.
Yeah. So what do you have coming up next as far as shows?
I will be going to the Portland Dog Show, but I will only be going for one day because our breed has a specialty
mm-hmm.
That we have down there. So we're going down for that. And then we'll be coming home the same day. But then we will be going to Alaska for a dog show up there because we have we call them our dog show family.
Mm-hmm.
So we have friends up there and we're trying to finish some dogs that need majors, which is like 3 to 5 points, which are harder to get. So you need a smaller amount up in Alaska to make a major. So we're going to bring all our dogs and hopefully make a major and make some of our dogs champions. So
I see.
Yeah.
So one of the questions I had about an online school, as you know, taking high school classes online, was wondering about not being around other kids. But it sounds like you have a community and social world through your work with dogs.
Yes, definitely through Dog 4-H and any 4-H project, and through dog shows, there's a whole bunch of other kids that are homeschooled too.
Mm-hmm.
And because it does allow them to go to more dog shows. And so I have friends at dog shows, and then I have other activities that we do as well. So I'm not just stuck at home all the time. Yeah.
Well, cool. And did you have any questions that you wanted to ask me before we end? I know you're.
Yeah. Well, like, I was wondering, like, what was the moment that you realized that you loved working with dogs, or, like, what sparked that interest, I guess?
Mm-hmm. Well, I've always loved dogs. I was passionate about dogs. I remember when I was in high school, I would read books about dog behavior and how dogs think and all, you know, all that kind of stuff. I was really curious about their behavior and what it was like to experience the world as a dog. But I didn't know at that point that I wanted to work with dogs professionally. And then I went to college at the University of Vermont, and I got a degree in animal science. And that was a really fun major because I had a lot of flexibility. It's the same major that like that would be like a pre-vet. So if someone wanted to go to vet school, they would be an animal science major. But I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I wasn't pre-vet. I was a general animal science. So I was able to take more electives. So I took a lot of human sociology classes, a lot of nutrition classes, and a bunch of interesting animal classes. Animal welfare, animals in society, dog training and behavior, zoo exotics and endangered species, and all these kind of different courses. But even then, when I graduated, I didn't know that this was, you know, that I wanted to work with dogs. And it's hard, as you know, there's not really a set path for someone who wants to work, especially with dog training or behavior.
Yeah.
So I thought I wanted to go back to school for human psychology. Because I'm very interested in that as well. But then I moved from Vermont to Seattle. And once I got to Seattle, I found an apprentice program for dog training and behavior up at the Academy of Canine Behavior in Bothell. And I thought that is when I would say if there was a moment, it would be when I found that apprentice program that was like, that is exactly what I'm looking for. And so I did that and then worked for them for a few years at their facility as a full-time trainer. And then I started my own business offering private lessons for people in Seattle. And mm-hmm. And then 7 years ago, I think, I started this radio show. And now I just finished writing my first book. And so it's just kind of continuing on from there. But it is, I think it was just sort of trying to stay present to what I was passionate about. And that just led me here.
Yeah, for sure. So do you work in like obedience training with owners and their dogs?
I do. I do obedience training. I would say with more focus really on the human than the dog. I work with people and their pet dogs. So where they're just wanting to maybe bring more ease into their relationship, or maybe they have a dog who's anxious or reactive on leash or have some sort of challenging behavior when guests come to the house or that kind of thing. So that can be a reason why people call me to sort of consult about the dog's behavior and use training to work with the dog to help their behavioral challenge. So it's kind of a bit of both.
Yeah, that's what I definitely think. It helps if the owner knows what they're trying to do, or they want to ask their dog, if they know how to ask in a proper way, then it will make it definitely easier for the dog to learn and pick up on what he's supposed to do.
Yeah. Well, just like in your field with as a junior handler, there's a lot of focus on you guys knowing what to do and how to do it well, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
So I would say that that's really important for people with their pet dogs, that the focus is as much on the person than the dog, you know, as the dog. I mean, there's certainly dog training, but people being the biggest influence on their dog's environment, we have to be really self-aware and it's a great opportunity for people to gain that self-awareness. And that's a lot of what my book is about. And that should be out this spring, hopefully.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
So have you ever trained your own dogs and competed with them, or just more focusing on working with others and their dogs?
Yeah, more focused on others and their dogs. But we've done some, we have two cattle dogs and we've taken them herding, and that was really fun.
Okay.
And then we have two labs as well. And I don't know, we're talking about maybe doing dock dogs with one of the labs. We've done nose work with several of our dogs, actually. Our dachshund, we've done nose work with. She's awesome at it, of course. And our female cattle dog knows how to hunt for truffles, the mushrooms.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah, so we've done some stuff like that. Not so much obedience, but more like more fun stuff, I think. So
yeah, that's why they have this new thing called like Barn Hunt. Well, it's not really new, but I'm now learning about it. And so I'm going to think about starting my Doberman training in that, because she really likes to hunt vermin and stuff like that in our backyard.
Yeah, cool. Well, it's been a pleasure to talk with you, Mariana, and I wish you the best of luck with your endeavors with dogs and then also, you know, in your shows coming up in Alaska, and I hope you get those majors that you're looking for.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And this episode will be archived on our website and on iTunes and on our Facebook page as well, so you can tell your friends and family that they can go there to listen to this interview as well. And when we come back from break, we'll be talking with Dr. Nels Rasmussen. He's back in the booth with us. We have two of our dogs here with us today also. We have Lois, our old dog Haven dog, and then Leia, our dachshund, who I was talking about, the nose work. They're going to get some tune-ups, and Dr. Nels is going to talk about the great work that he does. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
Oh, but what could be better than a saucy Irish setter, or when puppy love comes on strong, or a collie that's classy, a laddie needs a lassie. A lover and wife gives you a new leash on life.
The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to best practitioner Dr. Nels Rasmussen, we cover the world of animals. This week, July 17th, we'll start with the incredible Dr. Pohl story and my resulting concern for Dr. Jeff. Then, one of the best talkers and storytellers I've ever had on the air, Janice, president of Nuke Pro Supplements, joins us. We'll learn all about their wonderful products and introduce their latest cancer-fighting supplement. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
This is Julie Forbes. I'm excited to tell you about Farm Dog Naturals, a company that handcrafts herbal remedies for the all-natural dog. Quality and integrity are must-haves for anything that I recommend. Certified eco-friendly and cruelty-free, their products address issues like stress and anxiety, itching, hot spots, crusty noses, as well as pet urine, stains, and odor. Farm Dog Naturals is guaranteed, and I'm so happy with the results I'm seeing. Shipping is available worldwide from their website, farmdognaturals.com, or you can ask for them at a retailer near you. Again, that's farmdognaturals.com.
Make it a great day. Keep your dial on Alternative Talk 1150.
And now, back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
For a critter they've been scratching, a skunk was badgered, the results were strong. I hope that something better comes along.
Welcome back to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. And we are back with Dr. Nels Rasmussen, who's been here a few times over the years. Dr. Nels, welcome back to the show.
Great to be here.
So we've got two dogs here who one you have already worked on while I was talking with Mariana, and Leia is looking at you like, come on, man, where's mine?
Yeah, she's definitely, she was wanting it.
Yeah. So she's no stranger to your treatments, and you've worked with Lois once as well a couple years ago.
Yeah.
I think.
When she was a lot heavier.
Yes, she was. I know. She looks great, huh? And that's thanks to the Natural Pet Pantry and their cooked stew that they've been donating for her for this whole time. So that took that weight off, like, no problem.
Yeah.
Which for an older dog is not necessarily easy to do. So I was pleased to be able to refer you to a friend recently, which was what got you back on my radar again. And of course, I always like to make sure Leia gets her tune-ups as a dachshund and as a 13-year-old dachshund, to make sure that, you know, to not wait until she tweaks out, before, you know, not kind of calling you in crisis.
Right,
her
right.
back's tight. So a friend of mine has a little mix.
Chihuahua mix.
Yeah. And he, like, all of a sudden jumped off of the couch one day, and I think he let out a little yipe, and then it was like one of his back legs.
His right hind.
Was like lame.
Yeah, he was just like hanging it out there to the side and dragging it along, almost like he didn't know what it was doing or what it was for.
Yeah, and so of course they were very, very scared when they saw that his leg was like that, and the vet took a bunch of X-rays, didn't X-ray his neck, but I don't even know if it would have shown anything, but showed no injury.
Right, right.
And I said, well, regardless of that, definitely get in touch with Dr. Nels, because I know that it just sounded like...
Yeah, the typical thing I see.
Yes. So can you tell us what happened? I know this happens a lot for dogs when they are jumping, to be careful about them jumping, especially off of things.
Right.
That's what really...
Yeah. That if I was going to write a blog about the number one thing you can do to keep your, especially your small dog, from developing problems later in life, it's... Don't just let them jump down off of everything.
Yeah.
Come up with ways for them to get up and down easily, little ramps or steps or whatever, so they're not jumping 2 or 3 feet down. And every time they do that, it puts some stress into their neck through the weight of their head pulling on all their muscles and ligaments. And, you know, when they're young and bouncy, it's not that big a deal. But you do that several thousand times in their lifetime.
Sure.
It can start to add up.
So what does it do in the body? Like, what's your perspective on what caused Dash's right leg to go out, you know, lame?
Yeah. So what had happened is in his neck, which is the typical area that I find, in jumping down over and over and over again, he'd done something, excuse me, to his neck that had caused the muscles around the middle part of his neck to become really, really tight. And probably just that last jump just caused a little extra tension in an unbalanced way and possibly pulled his vertebra out of line or not. But there was, in feeling his neck, there was a lot more tension on the right side than the left side.
Mm-hmm.
And that was translating into a blockage of the flow of communication and energy between brain and body. And that happens, it can happen in the spinal cord as well as in the other tissues of the body. So that there's just poor communication. And when I say other tissues, that can be like the acupuncture meridians on the exterior of the body.
Mm-hmm.
So all those communication channels get interfered with when you have a massive imbalance of muscle tension that gets locked in place.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what we worked with him. And the results were actually visible right after the session.
Mm-hmm.
You could see some improvement. And then, of course, a week later, the improvement was like, you know, 80% at least better.
Yeah, I had visited, they're friends of mine, and I had visited him when I was just over visiting Carrie, and it had been, I think it was after the first session. I don't think that they had a second one. Maybe they did. I can't remember. I think it was after the first one, and it was maybe several days after and she had said that it seemed like his improvement was continuing. Like it wasn't just like, he had some improvement right after the session, and then that just sort of stayed where it was. It was like his body was continuing to improve as the days went on.
Right, and that's pretty typical. And we did do a second session just this last, no, it was the Tuesday before this one,
mm-hmm.
And Tuesday before yesterday. So he's had two sessions now,
mm-hmm.
and but what happens is because we're changing the way the brain and the body are relating, there's a communication that goes back and forth between the periphery and the central nervous system. And as that communication is freed up due to that lack of, or the disappearance of that big massive knot,
mm-hmm.
Then what happens is the brain can start to reevaluate the other tissues in the body and what's happening there and start to pay more attention to other areas. And so there's this gradual change as the brain and the body are now getting coordinated back towards the original design, you might say, how mm-hmm. it's supposed to work.
Yeah. I think the thing that's one of the things that's so great about how you are able to help animals and their people is that, and unfortunately, maybe you come to people after surgery has been done, but a lot of times it's like, I know this is the case in humans. It's just, you know, back surgery, back surgery, back surgery. And it's like, well, whoa, 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 you know, let's look, maybe, you know, maybe try some different approaches and work with the body.
Right.
Rather than cutting into, especially.
Yeah.
You know.
And I don't know if it's because the surgery does something to the animal or if it's because they were that bad off before anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I have never been able to get a paralyzed dog that had back surgery better. Whereas I've helped tons of dogs that had never had back surgery get better and get walking and running and playing again.
Right.
So it's to the point where if somebody tells me, well, my dog's had surgery, can they do anything? I just recently tried once more for one that looked like a really good prospect, and it didn't work out. And so I'm just thinking, you know, I don't think I should have people spend their money on me for
yeah.
what is not effective.
Must be something... I would imagine it's something that's happened in the surgery, not that they were just that bad that they had surgery, but there's something that maybe blocks your ability or something.
Yeah, you know, certainly the surgical procedure itself could interfere with a lot of things, but obviously the problem the animal had before was serious, so they wouldn't have been
sure.
doing the surgery.
Right.
You know, we got to give them that
sure.
and. In this particular case, the last one I was attempting, this woman was working with a number of different physical therapies as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, swim therapy and other physical therapy, doing everything she could to help the brain-body coordination and communication. And, you know, nothing any of us could do was making any lasting difference at all or any mm-hmm. real difference. He
yeah.
looked a little more comfortable for a little while, but that was about it.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, let's... Why don't we actually take a break and we'll get Leia set up here for her treatment. She's been waiting so patiently. You can tell us about what you did with Lois and what
yes.
you found with her. And then you can talk us through as you're working on Leia. You can talk us through that as well. And we'll do that after we take a break. So listen to a word from our sponsors and we'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. This summer, pack up the dog bowls and head to the Lodges on Vashon. Just a 20-minute ferry ride from West Seattle, Vashon Island is the perfect quick getaway for you, your family, and your furry friend. The Lodges on Vashon has 16 freestanding contemporary lodges, two communal spaces, and plenty of outdoor space to enjoy with your pooch. Go to lodgesonvashon.com for more information, because sometimes your dog needs a vacation too. Eric, people ask me to help them with all sorts of doggy challenges.
I can only imagine.
Oh yeah, dogs jumping on guests, new puppy questions, behavioral challenges like fear and aggression, even dog food sensitivities, you name it, and I've probably worked with it.
But can you help people even if they don't live in Seattle?
Absolutely. I've had great success with phone consultations and have even Skyped with people and their dogs from all over the country. Every dog should be approached as a unique individual. I've talked about this over and over again on the show. That's one of the parts of working with dog training and behavior that I love the most. Every client is different. If you're listening and you need help with your dog, just get in touch. I'd love to get you pointed in the right direction and answer all of your questions. Email me, host@dogradioshow.com. That's me, Julie Forbes, host@dogradioshow.com. I look forward to connecting.
Wait, dogs can use Skype? We're really living in the future.
The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options, to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their two stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
Organic, free range, and fresh daily. Alternative Talk, 1150.
And now, back to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
All right, we're back with Dr. Nels Rasmussen here with our dog, Leia. She's a dachshund. She's 13 years old, and she has had multiple treatments from Dr. Nels over the years. The first one started when she actually seemed like she had tweaked her back, and I, you know, was like, oh, something's wrong. And it was when I had first, we had first connected, I think.
Right. Yeah. And I remember she wasn't able to go up and down the steps. And...
Yes. That was what keyed me into, because she wasn't like paralyzed or anything, but she was hesitating before she would go up and down the steps. Oh, I just saw her.
Yeah, you see that spot?
So he's, yeah. So Dr. Nels has his hands on Leia right now, giving her a tune-up. So what are you working with right now?
Yeah, I've got two spots that I'm touching on the right side of her body, one on the middle part of her neck, and another one over on the right side of her rib cage, fairly low down. And as you notice, when I did just a little bit of a poke at it, she really flinched.
Yep.
That's an area where the energy blockage is having an effect, and so it becomes tender.
Yeah.
And so I don't push it a lot. I just touch it, and then I just hang on. And it's the hanging on to the right spot that gets the energy balance, the brain communication going again. Essentially, the brain is evaluating these places I'm touching. Because they are sensitive, it's like it provides this little extra bit that the brain is interested in.
Uh-huh.
And so anyway, it causes a response. Now, she's still a little flinchy. Oh, you see that yawn, by the way?
Yeah.
Yeah, that yawn is a sign that her nervous system is resetting itself.
Oh.
So I'm moving my finger down one rib from where I was now, and it's a little sensitive again. So she'll probably yawn multiple times. That's pretty typical.
Mm-hmm.
When I was working on Lois, she did a little bit of that, and then she flipped over after I was done, like, oh, this is so great. I can lay on my other side now.
So what are you feeling? So there was some tension in her back.
Yeah.
Right at the base of her rib cage.
Yep, right down low in her ribs.
And that's pretty common, it seems like, as a place for dogs.
It is. It is, especially with the long back dogs because, you know, there's a little extra stress there. What's interesting to me is it always goes hand in hand with this neck problem. And I believe the neck problem actually is what causes the imbalance in the muscles or the weakness. I'm not quite sure which. But it creates that area, that transitional point at the lower part of the thoracic cage and where the lumbar spine is.
Mm-hmm.
That area is now susceptible to stresses. And when you get the neck part balanced with that, then the tension goes out of it. It becomes comfortable again. The animal gets a lot more mobility.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes their neurology is totally screwed up because of that. And I've had many animals just dragging their hind legs around.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something that, remember you posted videos of different animals who were paralyzed to start and then through consistent sessions were able to get them walking again, which is incredible.
Right, right.
Do you find animals, once they start to kind of get into it, they start sort of presenting their bodies to you? I know Molly used to do that, the giant schnauzer.
Yeah, there's some dogs, they really get it. It's like, oh, this is the guy who makes me feel so darn good.
Yeah.
And so, yes, then what happens is I walk through the door and they throw themselves at my feet sometimes. They just, that flop right down.
That's what Molly was like. She was, she's still, Wendy moved to California, but she's a giant schnauzer. And she's like 12 now, I think.
Yeah.
Which is unheard of for a giant schnauzer. And she would, she was like, yeah, like throwing herself at you. So
yeah,
funny.
She would. And then whenever she felt like I'd really, you know, I'd hit the right spot and it was all relaxed now, she'd let out a huge bark and about knock us both over.
Yeah. So now you're on the other side of Leia.
Yeah, she's not nearly as sensitive here as she was on the right side. But there was a little bit of tension there, and I always find it's good to balance both sides.
Yeah.
And we'll go back here just to show that, see how that she's not all flinchy there now.
Yeah.
Yeah, so she really got a lot of benefit out of that, working that right side. Now, Leah, you're kind of hanging on the edge there. You're
making
me nervous.
Come on, you're straight at the edge of the table.
All right. Nice. Yeah, we can't have her falling off. That would just not be good radio.
No. Negate your treatment.
That's
too,
right, yeah. So, and before I came over here, I was working with a little rabbit, and I was thinking about that because she was up on the table. We were working at her house, and that little rabbit had lost the use of one of its hind legs, doing considerably better. It's zooming around. In fact, I had to make a sort of an emergency stop today because it was zooming around so much it hit some slick floor and wiped out and wasn't doing so well. So they're going to have to try to keep it confined while it gets its strength back. So it can hold itself together and not wipe out and cause itself permanent harm.
Hard to keep a rabbit from jumping, isn't it?
Well, these rabbits seem to like to do a little hopping, but they're not in the jump in the air, twist around kind.
I see. Have you ever worked on goats?
I have worked with a couple of goats.
Yeah.
I remember I helped one. I can't remember what I helped it with. I have no idea.
We have two goats now.
Oh, all right.
They are so funny. They're so funny. What's one of the strangest animals you've worked with?
Ooh, strangest. Well, you know, it may not seem strange, but working with a great big cow, she had little short horns sticking out, and it was a friend of mine's cow, and it couldn't walk to the feeder. It was really pregnant. It was about to deliver a calf, and it just couldn't hardly get up and go get food anymore, so it was just kind of throwing food in front of it. So I went out to his place and I grabbed a hold of one of the horns and started palpating around in the upper neck. And all of a sudden, she threw her head around and there was a great big crunch. And the next day, he found her. He had a 160-acre place at the farthest corner of the place. And she had delivered her calf out there. And then she walked it all the way back in that
afternoon. Oh, my gosh.
So she was all better.
Wow. That's good results, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're on the other side.
Yeah, I'm doing little kind of what some people might call cranial sacral balancing.
Okay.
It's she's not real sensitive here, but it's just good to make sure that energy is moving.
Yeah.
And so we're doing that as well.
So what did you, when you were working on Lois, unless you want to stay present to Leia?
We're just doing a final bit here. So
okay.
Yeah, we can move into talking about Lois.
Don't want to take
Lois.
Your attention off of her.
Yeah.
She deserves her full turn.
That's right. Well, actually, yeah. And with Lois, what we found was she had some things in the middle part of her neck, extremely common to find that most of the time.
Yeah.
And more in the upper part of her rib cage, just behind her shoulder.
Mm.
And it was on both sides, but particularly on the right side on her as well. And anyway, we got all that balanced out, and she stopped being all flinchy when I would poke at it. And,
uh-huh.
And as I say, after I worked on her, she kind of got up and yawned a little bit and then turned over on her other side and took a nice nap.
So yeah.
She's feeling pretty good about life right now.
Good.
Okay, look at that. Leah's doing great. Yeah, Leah.
It's nice to have dogs in the studio. Rarely, rarely ever.
Yeah.
Oh, Leah.
This being a dog show and having a dog on once in a while is good.
I know. Better be careful, though. My dog voices are going to start to come out. I'll lose credibility.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's true. We get around our animals. We don't talk like normal human beings anymore.
Yeah, it's true.
All right. So, if people are interested, I have my website. I just got a new website.
Oh, good.
It's not. It's a very simple website.
Yeah.
Which is nice. And it's called... The URL is healingministryforanimals.com.
Okay.
And so you can go in. And I give away a free report there about what I find and how it might affect your pet. I call it neuroenergetic interference.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's something that people, if they're interested, to go and click on the little, there's a little thing on the right side. I don't know what you call it. It's a box.
Yeah.
Put your name in there and email, and then we'll send you that report.
Okay. And that's healingministryforanimals.com.
Right.
Okay. And I'll post a link to that on our website as well, which of course is dogradioshow.com. Okay. So is
Yeah, she's
little Leia's all done.
She's good to go. Yeah.
Okay,
she,
good.
She's looking like she wants to run around now.
I know, probably. Or just pass out.
So, let's see. I had a thought, but something about working with a dog, all I can think about is petting the dog. There we are. All right. Yeah, so let's see. What other? Oh, yeah, I had a little Jack Russell I did a while back. I should talk about that.
Yeah.
That was a little dog named Tiny Friend, and he's 15, which is, you know, it's getting up there, and he was wobbling around pretty badly to where, you know, he couldn't really jump up or down on anything. He could just barely walk around. His back end was getting pretty weak. And we did a tune-up on him, and then another one 2 weeks later. And the last time I saw him after his second tune-up, he was 90% better. So he was, which for me, in a 15-year-old dog, I guess I get impressed easily or something. But I was pretty excited about watching that, you know, watching that improvement in just a couple of weeks in a dog that old. I wasn't really expecting it to work that well.
Mm-hmm.
So. I get impressed a lot of times by how well an animal is able to reinvigorate itself just by getting freed up from the interference in the nerve and energy systems.
I'd say that's one of the ways that I feel surprised in what I do, you know, continuing to learn and all that kind of stuff, but is when things work better than I thought they would, which is great. It's a great way to be surprised versus the other way, you know, when you're just, you know, consistently disappointed. I'll think, oh, this is going to be, you know, this is really going to be a process for this dog to kind of work out of this, you know, behavioral challenge or whatever. And then we just get the right combo of things from the get-go, and the dog just is like, whoop, and it's like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. I'm like, I know, it's amazing. I can't believe it.
It is. Sometimes you feel like you just undid a combination lock, and that's all it took.
Yeah, yeah. So that dog's name was Tiny Friend?
Tiny Friend, yeah.
That's a cute.
Great, great dog. And, you know, I talk a lot about mobility things, and on my website I have a lot of things that relate to mobility and videos that show before and after of paralyzed dogs.
Yeah.
But also in a lot of times I'm called in to help with animals that have suddenly had like a personality change. You know, it just sort of happened quickly.
Yeah.
And oftentimes the owner will know something happened, like, you know, a bunch of fireworks went off right next to it and it hasn't been the same since, doesn't want to go for a walk, and it's afraid of cars, you know, going by in the street. And then I reset their fight or flight system, which is very similar to what I was just doing today here. And amazingly enough, you know, they'll just calm right down. They'll be ready to go for walks again. So if you have an animal that has that sudden personality change, they don't want to do something they've done many times. Often it's just a matter of something had startled them and got them stuck in their fight or flight mode.
Interesting. Now you're found at healingministryforanimals.com, and then you have locations where you meet people in Seattle, and then you'll also go to people's houses.
Right. Mostly I like to meet people at some of the locations, save drive time and save expense for the people.
Yep.
And so in South Seattle, I go to a place called Interest Space. And in the North End, I haven't really got anywhere that's real consistent yet. I have worked out of the Natural Pet Pantry, still occasionally do. And then also out in Duval, there's a place that I go and I can meet people, even with horses there. I do. It's a farm, and I do horses and dogs and even a few people there.
Yeah. And so what were you doing, just real quick, because I asked for you to give me a little tune-up before the show, and that was different than what you were doing with the dogs.
Right. So in your case, we worked with you standing up, and you know, a lot of times when I'm working with people with physical health issues, I'll have them lay down on a table. But we didn't really have that, you know, opportunity.
Parking lot wasn't really going to happen.
So instead, what we did is basically access the emotional part of your brain, which really is what drives a lot of our physical responses anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And found that there was a few things that had stored up in there that were negative responses to emotional events. And we were able to, with this technique, very simply get your brain to get a new idea about that response and replace the negative with a positive, and all of a sudden the body starts to function completely differently. It goes back to its normal operating system instead of emergency mode.
Yeah. It's really so fascinating. I mean, bodies, physiology was always my favorite subject, one of my favorite subjects in school. And this kind of stuff is just so fascinating. And it's like, oh my gosh, okay, that makes sense to me. I can't exactly visualize it, but it does make sense to me intuitively. And I understand, you know, and then to see it work is just great, because it is a little more alternative, I guess.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Well, to reach out to Dr. Nels, you can email him, nels@nelshealingministry.com. Okay. And then healingministryforanimals.com is your website.
Right. And there's contact information there.
Great. Well, it was wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you from myself and on behalf of Lois and Leia for the tune-ups.
Great. I'd love to do it.
We'll all be running around like puppies tonight.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. We'll be back next Wednesday live at 2 p.m. here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150. Thanks for listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
You've been listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, Wednesday afternoons at 2 on Alternative Talk 1150 AM. Never miss another episode. Listen to our podcast online at dogradioshow.com or download them for free on iTunes or SoundCloud.